Blog Talk Radio.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
Zombie Master, and you sound like you're far away.
No, I'm right on top. I mean, unless fucking Skype decided to be a douchebag, which that could totally be the situation because I had to fix all the settings, apparently.
You still sound like you're in the room, but you're not right up to the microphone.
Again, just stay, keep going.
There you go. You sound a little clearer now.
Okay, all right, yes. Yeah, because Skype decided to wipe out my settings.
But I am the Zombie Master, and yes, and the story is finished, finally, with Cody Rhodes. Congratulations, Cody.
Bullshit. Story's not even halfway over yet.
But the Roman Reigns version of it is.
Yeah.
And
but, yes, like we said, welcome to another episode of The Betting Window, where we dive into good, the bad, and what the fuck was that in the wide world of sports and sports betting. On tonight's show, we talk back into baseball. Talk the tail end of college basketball is officially over. We start looking towards the NFL draft as well as the Masters strike off tomorrow. I'll be giving some bets for stuff like that just for the fun of it. But, yeah, again, it's as much as a blindness as a solar eclipse by Angel Hernandez.
How that motherfucker is still involved in baseball, your guess is as good as mine. Why they allow...
Tell me you saw the shit that he pulled against the Marlins.
Oh, yeah, I did.
The Yankee game.
The guy stepped off. He stepped off and threw the pitch, and then the ball was about 2 inches above strike zone, but yet he still called a strike on the hitter, and the batter was out. Hernandez is just he's just a fucking moron. But everybody keeps telling me, oh, nobody can do anything in baseball. What is Commissioner Buttfuck doing? Does he not see the fact that this man is a complete fuck up and a screw up? They have to fire. This has to be a reason to fire him. He's incompetent. If you were you're in your job, you do what you do. If you did your job half-assed, would they keep you around?
No.
Any job you do a half-assed job, or you just do a job where you just mail it in, are they going to keep you around? No. This man has been able to keep a job for how many years when it's documented on videotape, players, owners, managers, fans. Higher-ups in the MLB all say this guy is a fuck-up. But yet, Manfred's like, well, we can't do anything because he'll sue us. Yeah, well, double jeopardy, bitch. He can't go after you anymore. Fire his ass. Get him out of here. He's worthless.
It makes no sense of what he's doing.
He's a fuck-up. Just call it what it is. He's an absolute positive fuck up. There's no dancing around it. You blow, I mean, for those listening, if you don't know what we're talking about, the other day the Yankees and the Marlins were playing. I believe it was at Yankee Stadium, correct?
Yeah, it was Tuesday. It was yesterday or it was Monday, one of the two.
Monday, no, because today's Wednesday. I think it was Monday this happened. Sunday or Monday, I forget. But regardless,
it wasn't Sunday because I don't think this is not the last game against the Marlins. I think tomorrow is for them.
Okay, then it was Monday. Okay, so the pitch was, I forget the pitcher's name. He basically stepped off the rubber, quick pitched a Yankee hitter, an Angel called a strike. Batter was out. The ball was 2 inches above the strike zone.
It was at his letters.
It was just about at it. It was even maybe a little higher than letter high, but it was just
above the strike zone. So it was just people given where. It was a ball at his letters.
Exactly. I mean, it was clearly a ball. You could see it. I mean, the pitch track showed. It was clearly a ball. Angel Hernandez called the hitter out, and the batter's like, he stepped off. The man, Boone, comes out. He stepped off. And Angel's like, no, he didn't.
Now, he wasn't the field manager at the time. The first baseman was. I don't know. Was that call overturned?
No.
Okay, if you're the field manager, you should be fired.
Well, it's like the call wasn't overturned. They all met, but they didn't overturn. As far as I know, you might have to do a little research on this. As far as I know, it was never overturned.
Okay, well, if it was the end of the inning or something like that, then it never was overturned.
I think it was the third out.
Yeah,
if memory serves correctly. But the fact of the matter is, and anybody who's been listening for a while knows my hatred for this man. He's just, there is no call for baseball to keep this man around. He, time in, time out, and I even said it on the show, and Christian can reiterate, and Ronnie, you can reiterate it too. There was one game against the Yankees and the Red Sox a couple of years ago. Angel Hernandez was at first base. Five times his plays got overturned because he called the wrong thing. Once he was out, he was ruled safe. Once he ruled safe, he was ruled out. And the situation just kept continuing. Five times his plays were reviewed. He looked directly at the camera, shaking his head like, why they keep reviewing me? Because you're a fuck-up, schmuck. That's why. You are putting, I swear to God, if I'm a manager of a team and I look at the umpire list and Angel Hernandez is anywhere on that field, I'm manager, I'm like, oh, fuck, we're screwed tonight. And that goes for both sides. It's not like he favors one team. He fucks up everybody.
Well, then here's my question, and this is another topic we can talk about this, is when do we bring an instant replay for pitching?
They won't do that and I'll give you two reasons why. It's because then they talk about the whole robotic ump thing. Plus, that's going to add more time to the game, which we all know Commissioner Buttfuck doesn't want to. He wants to shorten this game to like maybe 5 seconds. I'm waiting for an institute of rule going, okay, everybody gets one pitch.
Have you ever seen the instant replay idea for Major League Baseball?
I've glanced at it. I've not read it verbatim.
It does not add any time. It legitimately does not add any time. Hell, I watch tennis matches that will use the exact same software as what baseball balls and strikes would use, and I shit you not, it adds, if it's adding anything, it adds maybe 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's literally, oh, you think that's a ball? Tap the helmet, goes to the review, overturned or it's a strike. Done. That's it. Same with the catcher. Taps the helmet, goes back, challenge, ball and strike. And then it shows it up there what it is. It's not a robo ump because everything's there. And you only get, say, like I think they said, it's in the minor leagues. I think they only get like three challenges.
Well, I understand that, and you're right. I've heard that rule before. I think the Patriots had that, because I think when I was at a Patriots game, I saw a hitter tap the helmet or a catcher tap the helmet, and the pitch was checked on. But the whole bottom line is that would require Manfred to actually make another rule, and, you know, he doesn't want to institute any more rules because he's already gotten brutalized in a lot of rules that he implemented.
This is a rule that everybody would agree on.
Yes. So since everybody would agree on it, he's not going to do it because he wants to say this is a rule that nobody can argue. Because this is going to make this, because if they implement this and he's proven wrong on a lot of stuff,
then you'll hold him accountable.
Then he's going to be like, well, he'll find some way to weasel out of it, because Manfred's another fuck up, and 2029 can't come soon enough, because then that's when that man's stepping down as commissioner, and it couldn't come at a better time. And I'm hoping they go old school and bring in a guy that's actually an older gentleman that is a more of a classic baseball person.
I don't mind the way baseball is now. The problem is that I understand they want to make the game shorter. I understand that. On the same hand, you can't – to add more offense, that's great. But the pitch clock and the instant replay does hurt this game. Yes, it does hurt. But it's not – the game is not hurting itself with popularity. Game is thriving right now with popularity.
Oh, I know it is. Look, I'm not saying the game isn't popular, because it is. But what I'm saying is that, and like I said, I've gone on record with the thing is, like, Manfred is in this, is controlling baseball like it's a business. I know it is, but it is, but it isn't, if that makes any sense.
Well, okay, explain, because it is a business.
I know it's a business, but what it is like, we're trying to be, you know, like, you try to be fair, but it's like the way he approaches it is like he's saying, oh, the fans want this, the fans want this, the fans want this, the fans want that. I don't recall ever seeing a fan come up to a commissioner or somebody in Major League and go, you know, baseball's too slow. Do something about that. I have never in my life seen an interview, written or video-wise, in my opinion, that I've never seen someone say, baseball's too slow, speed it up.
Oh, I've seen plenty of kids.
Okay. You see, there's you right there. Kids nowadays have the attention span of a gnat. They don't have the attention span of, and that's because of they're either walking around or they got their nose in a phone. Most of the time, I've watched videos where it was in Arizona. The camera flashed on these five young ladies sitting in the crowd.
Yeah, this one's always been talked about. I've heard this. I've known the story.
Right.
I know what the.
The story is that for anybody new listening, it's like these five girls they kept the camera on them for about 5 minutes, which in a 5 minute period, not one of them lifted their head. They had their nose glued to their fucking phones. They're at a ball game. If you want to stay on, you want to spend that kind of money, because they had pretty good seats from what I remember. They were on the field level. It's not like they were in the nosebleeds. It's not like they couldn't see the game. And they had their eyes glued to the phone. This, to me, this is who Manfred's speeding the game up for? That's bullshit.
But again, the era when I grew up with baseball, guess what? My era of baseball had to do with a needle in its arm, John, remember? Because in 94... baseball was dead.
Was it dead?
It was dead. The strike killed baseball.
the strike killed baseball because the simple reason is because at the time the players were asking and the owners, they were both asking for ridiculous things. I'm not going to sit here and say it wasn't, because both the players and the owners at the time in 94 were asking for the world, and they weren't going to get the fucking world. Neither one of them were going to get the fucking world.
And here's the thing. I wasn't a like, I loved baseball growing up. When baseball went away, I went to football. I went to basketball with Jordan. I didn't care that baseball left. I didn't get back into baseball. Granted, I was playing. That's a different issue. But, like, I didn't care until 97, 98, with Jeter and the Yankees, even as a Met fan, Jeter and the Yankees, and then Maguire Sosa. When it got back to its popularity, where then from 98 to 2002 was the steroid home run era with A-Rod, Bonds, and Maguire and Sosa.
You're right, and I look, I'm not discounting what you're saying, but I'm saying for, I hate to use my age, but for people of my age, your late 40s, early 50s, they remember when baseball was played like a chess game. It took however long it took, and there was no rush on it, but then games like that, you know, you had extra inning games that lasted a long time and stuff like that. But that was, all right, you got two good teams here duking it out. This was before they put a guy on second base.
I agree that rule is stupid. At least let them play. If you are going to do that, at least let them play 2-3 innings.
But the whole point I'm trying to make is this. It's like, you play the game like, and I keep referring to it as a chess match because that's the God's honest truth. It was played like a chess match because it's like, okay, which team is going to break first? You know, it's like I keep going back to that one game where it was the Braves and the Mets that went to like 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, the 18-inning game.
The Rick Camp home run game. I mean, for God's sakes, a batter, a pitcher who batted a whopping 83. And the announcer at the time was John Sterling, if memory serves correctly.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I think it was John Sterling, and this game was played in 84, 85. This is when Sterling worked for the Braves.
Yeah.
Sterling's like, oh, if he hits a home run. And he predicted it. And the next thing you know, Camp's driving a ball over the left field wall. How often do you see that? And it's like, and I got to give the Braves credit. That was fireworks night. They still shot off fireworks at 4:30 in the morning when the game was over. I give them credit for that. But you see, those are the games. And why I remember that is because it was memorable. It's because they didn't have to put a guy on second base. They didn't have a pitch clock. They didn't have you can't call a timeout at home plate. You get one and that's it. You can't throw more than five balls over to first base or you got to move to second. All these rules are bullshit, in my opinion. Let me finish it. This is my last thing I'm going to say. Basically, all these rules, I still love baseball. My heart's still always going to be with baseball. It's like you have football. Baseball's always was in my blood and always will be. But in my opinion, Manfred has, in essence, ruined baseball for me a little bit. I was at 100%. I'm about 85 to 90%. I'll never be 100% as long as Manfred's in charge and as long as these rules, some of these rules, are continued to be in place. The bigger bases, I could care less. It really, you know what? I thought it was going to be a problem. To be quite honest, I haven't noticed a difference.
I've noticed a huge difference in steals.
I mean, steals, yeah, I understand that. But the bases for themselves don't look like they say, oh, they were going to look like pizza boxes. They don't look like pizza boxes.
No,
you guys,
think...
some of these people were getting a little overzealous with that.
Again, you're listening to freaking Twitter.
No. We're not listening to Twitter. I'm just listening. This was what I was listening to MLB Network. They were talking about this and stuff like that. They're like, oh, I think Harold Reynolds said, oh, he joked around. He goes, oh, they're like pizza boxes. And somebody ran with that. And then hence the memes were born.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the basis thing, I could care less about that rule. That increased steals, great. That's a little more, because steals have been down the last couple of years. I get that. That's fine. But the whole, you get one timeout as you're a batter, and then that's it. You can't only, it's like you're turning this into a joke, in my opinion. But I've already said, I said that was my last thing on it. I know how you feel about it. I wish somebody would call in or talk about it, but.
Okay, So I'm going to do this right now. So let's go from, the last rule change recently was 2023. Obviously, there's some rule changes this year, but that's not what I have right now. The biggest rules changes probably was 88, and then nothing happened until 2008.
Okay.
By the way, 88, the rule change was catchers need to wear protective helmets.
Gee, that's fucking brain surgeons for them. Because I remember, and, because we just lost a Met the other day, Jerry Grody, a longtime Met, one of the original Mets from 62 or 3, I believe. He passed away at 81 or 91. I forget what his exact age was. He used to catch. I've seen pictures of him. He used to catch with just his regular ball cap turned backwards and just a face mask in front. That's hard school. That's hardcore.
So, all right. So here we go. I'll even go all the way back up to the, because they have rules that were
rest
all the way
to Jerry Grody. That's all I'm going to say.
So I have the rule changes all the way back to 7. So this, you'll laugh at this. The original rule change game used to end after the inning in whatever team scored 21 runs.
Mercy rule, in other words.
No. It was a reach. There was no 9 innings. It was
whoever reached
21 was the game.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, you know what it is.
But you got to remember, too, this was also like back when they had a pitcher's box. They had no gloves.
Well, no, they had gloves, but it was just basically like work gloves.
So, all right,
it wasn't like the big, fat gloves that we have today, you know.
Yeah, so, all right, so here we go. I'll go from 78. Pitcher cannot throw at the batter. That was a rule change.
Duh.
Catchers must wear, in 88, the rule change was catchers must wear protective helmets on defense.
Again, duh.
Right. Now, there's no new rule change until 2008, where MLB added limits on home run calls, fair or foul, instant replays to affect all games starting September 1st.
Okay.
Which was the playoff run.
Okay.
Then there wasn't another rule exempt until 2014. Manfred didn't get in until 2019?
I don't remember when. I'll look up. When did he start? Keep talking. I'll look it up.
Yeah. So 2008, MLB, I already said that. 2014, runners attempting to score may not deviate from direct path to the plate in order to intently connect with the catcher, the Buster Posey rule.
Oh, okay. Here's the thing. About the thing. January of 2015 is when he took over.
Okay, so the last one before he took over was the Buster Posey rule. Okay, as of right now, that's we understand that. You have to at least make the attempt to slide within the base pass. You can't run the catcher over.
I agree with that rule, but I also disagree with that rule. I understand it's to be, they want to protect catchers from getting seriously injured. I get that.
Well, Posey literally his career was over after that play.
True, but here's my thing when it comes to that whole rule. I remember slides. I remember a slide back in, showing my age is hell here.
Oh, the Pete Rose slide.
Oh, well. No, but I'm talking not the Pete Rose Buddy Harrelson slide. That happened in 73, but that I didn't see that live because I was 3 fucking years old. But I'm talking about it was 85 or 86. It was a Mets Pirates game. I remember because it was on the highlight reel. It used to be on the Mets intro when they were on Channel 9 back when, if you can remember that far back.
Well, I mean, shit. They're technically still on 9 PIX.
But no, but they were actually on. They called it WOR Channel 9 for us.
Oh God, WOR. I've heard of WOR.
That's how far this goes back. But I don't remember the name of the pirate player. But I do remember it was Gary Carter. The pirate player basically put a shoulder block into Carter. They both practically did a full flip, and Carter still held on to the ball and threw the guy out at second. That's hardcore. You know, I hate to say it, but some people nowadays, I hate to say it, and you may agree or disagree. It's like a lot of players now are almost pussified because when they played back in the older days, if you want to say it that way, you barreled into the second baseman to break up a different thing. You went spikes up. You barreled into the catcher.
But you want to know what the problem with that was? And this is where...
Am I wrong? Do you remember when those used to happen?
I remember that, but you want to know what the biggest problem with that was? Is that then you get the youth players... And I'm not even talking about minor leagues. I'm talking about high school and not even college. College, high school, little league, they're emulating or imitating what they're seeing in the game.
Right.
And the problem is even when I was as much as when I played almost every position, I was a catcher, I was a pitcher, I was a third baseman. Second baseman. I was a utility player.
I only played three positions when I played, but I'll explain that when you're done.
I was taught to always stay. Like I always played the plate like I did at third. I straddled home and took one step forward.
Okay.
So if anyone decided, because the rule was you had to slide into home plate.
Okay.
I am not blocking home. So if you hit me, we have a problem. It's interference on the runner.
Okay.
But the minute I caught that ball, I am stepping foot perm planted, one knee down, ready for you to come in. No one had the balls to throw a shoulder. That's a different issue. But that's the way the game was. That's the way kids should have been taught to play. You straddle the base or have one step behind the base, and then when you get the ball, you step in front of the plate and block the plate. There's no interference. But the problem was you get all these people that are looking at like they imitate Pete Rose. They look at the Buster Posey rule where they try to throw a shoulder down. And in high school, it was getting to the point where kids were getting hurt. And the Buster Posey thing is what put it over the edge. Because Buster Posey was the star for the Giants at the time. I was going to say 49ers. For the Giants at the time, and he broke his leg in three places and pretty much that was the end of his career. I mean, he still played, but that was it. Like, he was never the same player.
No, look, I get it. And like you said, you played in a different era than I played in when I played Little League. When I played Little League, I pitched, I played right field, and I played third base. Now, the mentality of when you played was vastly different from the decade that I played in. I played in the late 70s, early 80s.
Well, now, I played in the steroid era.
But here's the difference, and you can tell the decade, the coach from how they taught to play then, as opposed to when you were doing it. Now here was the thing: when I was at third base, I didn't play a lot of third. I played maybe if we played 15 games that season, I think I played third base two or three times, but. I remember the third base coach, if a ball was hit to the third or, you know, to the second baseman and they threw the ball to third to get the lead runner out at third, the coach was saying, break it up anyway. That's what I would always hear. And it didn't make sense to me until I got a lot older. In other words, they're saying, break it up any way you can. Dive, slide, hit, do whatever you could. And the same thing would go for the catcher. I can't tell you how many times I would see guys barreling into the catcher so the catcher would drop the ball so they could score. I've seen it a dozen, and you know what? Did kids get hurt? Yeah, they got hurt. But then the old thing, rub some dirt on it, get back out there.
And the majority of them did. But there's also a difference in, again, era of getting hit and being hurt and getting hit and being injured. And I'll even go back to the pros. Buster Posey didn't get hurt. He got injured to the point where his season was over.
I get that.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that's why they changed the rule. And I understand, but at the same time, too, it's discretion advised. If the ball is in away from the base up the line and a guy runs right into the catcher, that's not anyone's fault but the fucking cutoff man that didn't throw the ball into the spot.
No, you're right. But now the big thing is like the runners have to be given a lane. And I understand that rule to a point. But basically that's almost like saying, oh, if you got the ball, you got to let them, you know, you got to let them, they have to slide, you know.
What's funny is a lane, they never describe what a lane is. If you take one step either in front of the plate or behind the plate, like if you're like angling like you would at third, take one step back, there's a lane. You're not stopping them, but guess what? The minute you catch that ball, it's fair game. You can move in front of the base path.
Right, but you know what it is? And here's the thing, too, when you're talking about Little League, I saw a clip, I don't know how many years ago it was, because it's been around a while. You may or may not have seen it. And it had to do with the Little League parents and stuff. I think that was the majority of why this clip went somewhat viral. It was a kid was running home. The catcher caught it and basically tagged the kid out on his head and basically took the ball and basically his glove and the ball and hit the kid in the head.
Yeah,
with the ball,
I know. I saw it.
You saw that play, right? And the parent, you hear a parent go, was that necessary? And they go, I tagged him on his head.
Well, parents also need to know how to fucking shut their mouths.
I understand. But you know what it is? That kid tagging the kid out on this thing, you tag him on his leg or shoulder. You don't basically punch him in the head with the ball. Because essentially that's what it looked like.
And that's where a parent needs to stop. And hello, Christian.
Hello, Christian.
Hello, friends.
We're just talking about baseball, how the rules have changed.
So we're at 2014 right now, and now we're getting into anything that's happened here is Manfred.
But fuck, get it right.
So 2016 slides. On potential double plays, require the base runner to make a bona fide attempt to reach or remain on the base. So pretty much you cannot, like the old school way where they would be 3 feet out of the baseline, they can't do that anymore. That's fine. I'm good with that.
I got one name to throw at you, Chase fucking Utley, period.
But I'm saying that rule, commissioner's right on that. As long as that hand can get to the base, it's legal. But if you're 3 feet out of the baseline, no, that's obstruction. That's a double play.
But you know what? Thankfully, the Mets won that playoff series. But that game, that play could have very well. Christy, do you remember that play?
What play?
Did you chase Utley when he broke Tejada's leg?
No, I don't.
Well, if you go back, go to YouTube after the show and you can look it up. Basically, Chase Utley was past second base. Then he slid.
Was that 2013?
No, that was 2015.
Okay, so
that was
this
the year, that was the year, that was the year the Mets were in the World Series.
Okay, so this rule came, so this rule came before that.
Right. Basically, Utley slid past second base once he was already past. His body, his
oh no,
upper,
this rule led to that. This rule, that was led to this rule.
Basically, his upper body and his head were, would have like, second base would have been almost like a pillow to Utley before he slid.
Mm-hmm.
Slid into Tejada, spikes up, and broke Tejada's leg.
Yeah, it was a dirty slide.
It was the dirtiest fucking slide I've ever seen in my life.
It was a dirty slide.
Wow.
And the fact that the umpires ruled it a fair enough slide and Utley was able to come back in the game because they called him out. The umpire called him out.
Mm-hmm.
But then they reviewed it and he was allowed to come back in the game and go back to second base. And the Mets were friggin' hot. Thankfully, it didn't cost him. Because if that had cost him the World Series, there would have been a lot of controversy over that. Unfortunately, the Mets beat the Dodgers in that series and there was no... And then they threw behind Utley the next year, and Syndergaard got thrown out. But, and that guy's still a free agent, so go figure that one out.
All right.
That was the whole point. Is like, it was a disgusting slide. It was absolutely pitiful.
So now 2017, we get into no more intentional walks. This is the four fingers.
That rule I could care less about.
Yeah. Right. Now we get into, now remember, take this with a grain of salt, whatever we have here, because now we get into COVID. Pitchers, this is also the pitchers must face three batters, appearance or pitch to the end of the half inning. That's fine. That's what it is now. It's fine. COVID-19 shortened season. What are you going to do about that? Extra inning rules, ghost man on second. That was stupid. That should have went away. Seven inning doubleheader. It was COVID. What are you going to do? Postseason extended to 16 teams. Again, COVID. What are you going to do? Universal DH, which is now officially a part of everything.
Oh, before I forget, Christian, I sent you a link to that slide. I want you to check that slide out while you're while we're talking, so you can see what we're talking about.
What, you sent it on Facebook?
I sent it on Facebook.
All right, hold on, let me see.
2022, the draft lottery to discourage tanking, which I don't mind that. That's a fair rule. Postseason jumps up to 12 teams. From 16, the DH gets the DH goes to the National League. The base increased from 15 to 18 inches, and the defensive band shift is banned.
Okay. But you know what? The shift being banned, that needed to go away because that was ruining the game in a lot of ways, I think.
So I'm just saying, as of right now, there's nothing on this list that he's really done bad.
So you see the slide now. You see how where he started his slide?
Oh.
For those listening, I just sent Christian a link to the Chase Utley Ruben Tejada slide. So Christian, now seeing your fresh eyes on this, you're a baseball fan. Was that or was that another dirty slide?
Oh, that was dirty as fuck.
Never saw it. He never got to see it. This is his first time seeing it.
No, you've seen it. You just don't remember it.
I just don't remember it.
Because it's the Mets and the Phillies. It's not the Yankees.
No, it was the Mets and the Dodgers. It was the Dodger at this point because this was the playoffs. This was an oddly was a Dodgers.
I stand by what I said. It's not the Yankees.
But no, so but your opinion, that was one of the that was a filthy slide. And that's why the slide rule was. Look, if you were back in the older days when you broke it up, you rolled into the guy, so he would have to jump over you or he'd fall over. He went in spikes up past the base.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, we all know that's a.
And you know what? Tejada's career never rebounded from that. His career was essentially over after that play. He never came back. I mean, he came back.
No, it's the same
thing.
He never
played in the major leagues again. I mean, he did, but it was like he played maybe about 10 games.
It's the same thing with Utley.
No, with Buster Posey.
Posey. All right.
You said pussy.
Well, then 2023, he added the pitch clock, and pitchers are allowed the step off to the plate without penalty. So, okay, so I can give you three things right now that he implemented that gave him bad. That's bad. He's not really killed the game.
He hasn't killed the game, but he's definitely tarnished it in a way.
I don't see where, though. I mean, okay, the pitch clock, the disengagement, and the the ghost man on second are the only three issues I have. Everything else there, I mean, most of the stuff that he did was COVID-related, unfortunately. And his hands are tied with that.
Right.
So I don't think he's killed the game. I think he's trying to update the game for these kids that, like we said, that have an attention span of have a TikTok attention span. 10 second intervals. And again, I stand by it. When me and Christian were growing up, baseball was dead in the early 90s.
No, when you were growing up, because you're one of the old fucks of the show now.
I'm not Chris.
Look,
but no, Christian, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not. I'm just trolling you.
In 98, baseball was dead in 94, and the only reason baseball got back to any type of popularity was because of a needle in someone's arm.
Mm-hmm.
That was what was the tagline? Chicks dig the long ball.
Mm-hmm.
They made their thing around that because that was the way to do it. Now it's you have to make the game not exactly shorter, but you almost have to make it like how football is, where every play in football is 15 to 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 15, 20 seconds, reset. 15, 20 seconds, reset. He's trying to almost make baseball the same way where it's 15, 20 second intervals, reset. And everything is there, but it's just, I get what he's trying to do, and trust me, baseball is dying because the old guard, and I'm not even saying you, I'm saying older than you, actually, the old guard is gatekeeping baseball. They're not allowing it to change because you're getting the 60, 70-year-olds saying, oh, well, it's not my game. Well, it's not meant for them anymore. It's not even meant for me and Christian anymore. It's meant for my nieces and nephews. It's meant for the kids that are just coming up through high school. It's meant for them. It's now to get them to go to games, you might have to shorten the game a little. You might have to, you know, God forbid, I'm not saying add a fucking mercy rule. That's God forbid, that's stupid. But you're getting your money's worth for what it is, and you're trying to get these ballparks packed, I mean, shit. Look at Oakland. Oakland had literally in their opening weekend had less than 2,000 paid attendants. Not people in stands, paid attendants.
Yeah, that's crazy.
More people were fucking outside the stadium than they were inside the stadium. I think that's what they're doing. And by the way, the good thing is you look at places like Baltimore, hell, even the Yankees, the Met, the kids coming up right now, they're going to bleed more life into this fucking game. I mean, fuck, Jackson Holliday is going to fucking be a superstar, and he just got called up.
Yeah, I saw that he just got called up, and the kid's going to be as long as he doesn't fuck
Christian,
up.
Christian, I'm sorry.
He's going to be a – Jackson Holliday got called up by Baltimore today.
And he already has an RBI.
That's cute. Tell me who's in first place in the AL East.
I understand that, but this dude's going to be the Orioles right now. Oh, God, dude, this fucking – that fucking lineup is terrifying, too. So is the Yankees.
Okay. That's adorable. Tell me who's in first place in the AL East right now.
Yeah, tell me you're going to keep that pace up all year.
You see how he just doesn't answer my questions, John?
The Yankees are 10-2. They're about to be 10-3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, Ronnie, but here's the thing. When it comes to something like, and you guys have always busted my balls on it, it's a 162-game season. Can the Yankees keep it up?
No.
Nobody knows.
They're not gonna keep up a 10-2 pace every 12 games.
Okay.
That's not you. Christian, that's near impossible. You're gonna have a swoon where they're gonna go 3-7 out of a 10-game split.
Yeah, I mean that's expected to happen. It's a long year.
But I'm saying you're not gonna keep up within 10 games. You're not gonna have them go 8-2 all year. That if they do, God, that's the greatest fucking team ever to play.
And it can be done, and it has been done. Christian, you remember? I don't remember what year it was. What was the year the Mariners went like with 100 something wins?
In 2001.
They had what? I had 108.
They had 100. No, they set the record. They broke the record we set.
Yeah.
Because they won 116 games. It was actually 2000 because we beat them in the ALCS. That's when we played the Mets in the World Series.
Yeah, that was So,
I mean, Ronnie, I understand your argument, but Chris's argument is it can never happen. It has happened, and I'm not talking about 20, 30, 40 years before that. It happened in the 2000s. It can happen. I'm not saying I'm not defending the Yankees, and I'm not defending what you said. Can it happen? Yeah. Will it happen? Nobody knows. Just like my with the Mets. Do I think they're going to fuck up? More than likely, because they can't get their pitching staff is never going to get right. And that's going to cost them more games than it's going to cost them anything. When you don't have a starting five rotation that's steady, and you keep – they've already called 3 or 4 guys up already, and it's only the first week and a half. You know, you sign a pitcher one day and you release him the next day because he only went 2 innings. Can the Mets keep up this pace? Nobody knows because it's only the second week.
Right. I'm even going to say, I do not think you're not going to get – the Yankees are not going to have a 10-2 record every 12 games. Like, the Mets are not going to be going 4-7 or 7-4, 4-7. Like, you're going to have your ups. You're going to have your winning streaks. You're going to have your peaks. You're going to have your valleys.
But unfortunately, I think the Mets are going to have more valleys than peaks. And I think the Yankees are going to have more peaks than valleys.
Like, that's the thing. It is a very – it's still a long year. And we all understand this.
And the reason I'll say that is because the Yankees lineup is built tremendously different than the Mets lineup.
Actually, Yankees. What's hilarious is people are bitching that they just put Volpe in the leadoff spot.
That's good sound baseball. The kid proved he could lead off a game. He proved it. Why not give him the shot? It's his to fuck up. You know, it's his to fuck up. And Christian, correct me if I'm wrong. It's like, if you got a guy that you know that's going to get on base 8 out of 10 times, you're going to keep that guy in leadoff. You're not going to.
Yeah, I prefer him at leadoff, and I prefer Glaber a little further down in the lineup because Glaber doesn't come off to me as a leadoff guy, you know. But I get why Boone did it, but now he sees that, you know, I think Volpe's better. Like, order of Volpe, Soto, and Judge, 1, 2, 3. That's scary.
That's exactly, see, that's exactly why.
And Giancarlo at 4, and if he stays around, you put Rizzo at 5, and then you bring up Spencer Jones, and geez.
Spencer Jones is not going to be up this year. He'll be up.
He'll be up this year.
He's in Somerset right now?
He'll be up this year.
Yeah, he's going to be up this year, but he's not going to be up until September, August or September. You're not
All-Star
going to
game. I bet you see him at the All-Star game.
That's still rushing him too fast. Because I did that with Volpe, and it almost didn't work out with Volpe. But thankfully it did. But they almost ruined Volpe, but thankfully it didn't happen. That's why the Mets have not rushed up the Acuñas, the Jet Williams, the Ryan Cliffords, the Drew Gilberts, because they're afraid if they rush them up, they're going to try to produce too much too fast. They're either A, going to get burned out, or B, the pitchers are going to own them, and then they're fucked. But I'm never going to become a full-blooded Yankee fan. And Christian, this is not a knock.
Christian just dropped off. I don't know what happened.
Oh, well, he'll be back. He'll be back. I've always respected the Yankees. Did the Yankees because of their tradition, their lineage, and everything that, you know, there's no discounting what they've done in this league. You know, the 27 world titles?
Yeah.
27 world titles. You've had, I mean, they've had more numbers. I think they lead Major League Baseball in retired numbers. And rightfully
so. I think every single digit number is retired.
Yeah, you got. I could even go through them, and I don't think I'll miss one. Billy Martin, number one.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter, number two.
Uh-huh.
Babe Ruth, number three.
Lou Gehrig, number four.
Joe DiMaggio, number five.
Joe Torre, six.
Mickey Mantle, seven.
Yeah.
Yogi Berra and Bill Dickey, because there's two guys that got that number retired.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's Bill Dickey and Yogi Berra. It's the only player in Monument Park to have number eight retired twice. If you ever go to Monument Park, look it up. They have two number eights.
What's his name again?
Bill Dickey.
Okay.
And number nine was Roger Maris.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from a Mets fan to know that, that's respect for the Yankees. The Yankees this year, their lineup is fucking frightening. If this isn't a murderer's row, a reinvention of the term murderer's row, I don't know what you got between Soto, Judge, I mean Rizzo, Giancarlo.
Yeah,
Soto.
He's actually just made history right now.
Did he just hit his 400th?
No, he just became the first player to hit a home run against all 30 teams.
Yeah, he just did it against his old team.
He just did it against his old team. Yeah, but I'm going to tell you, you know who I really like on this year's Yankee team, guys?
Who's that?
Alex Verdugo.
How do you do?
You know what? He's impressed me.
You know what he is? You know who he reminds me a lot of?
Who's that?
He brings the same presence that Nick Swisher bought in 2009. Just that energy, happy-go-lucky guy. But the difference between Alex and Nick is, you know, Alex has a little bit more swagger to me than Nick Swisher because he's a little bit more laid back. But he brings that dog that the Yankees have needed for years because, you know, the Yankees have had a bunch of nice guys the last couple years.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but That's not the player I thought you were going to say. In my eyes, you know who I think of when I think of Alex Verdugo? I think of another long time. I think of Brett Gardner.
Yeah.
Because of that hard-nosed, he's laid back, but he's also intense. He's not as intense as Brett Gardner was, because Brett Gardner had a fight with the helmet bench, and the helmet bench won, or the helmet rack won. Remember that? Because he slammed his helmet that, and the helmet came back and hit him in the face.
I just think the thing with Brett was a Yankees Yankee. You get what I'm saying by that?
I get it.
I'm going to give you a perfect example of that. Remember that weekend in baseball where every jersey worn by a major leaguer had their nickname on the back?
Yep.
What are the Yankees traditionally known for when it comes to their jerseys?
Not having anything on the back.
Gardner didn't want his nickname on the back. He goes, can I just get one with the number 11 on it like that? That'll be sufficient enough for me. You know, and the one thing I always say about Brett Gardner was, you know, he was that quote-unquote leader after Derek retired. You know, he was older. He was on that 09 team. I loved Brett Gardner. Like, I really did. And, yeah, it sucks the way he went out, but the way he went out kind of reminded me of Posada. You know, yeah, I don't want to play for anyone else. I mean, he was a Yankee through and through. And who knows, down the road,
number 11.
What's going to happen with manager? I can see him becoming the Yankees manager.
Because you know what it is about Brett Gardner? And Brett Gardner, to me, is a throwback to – he was almost like a – I hate to use this expression, but he was – if he played the decade of the Mickey Mantles and the Roger Maris's and stuff, he would have fit perfectly in with that type of player, because he was that type of player.
Mm-hmm.
He was that stubborn, old school, old player mentality. I hate to use that term, but he was an old school player in a young man's body, because that's the best way to describe him.
Yeah, I love Brett Gardner, and personally, I love him even more because I remember. I think you guys are gonna remember this game. Remember when they played the Cubs and he hit a home run to put the Yankees ahead, like late in the ninth inning. The Cubs were winning 2-0. This is the year after the Cubs won the World Series, right? And the Yankees offense couldn't get anything going, right? I mean, struggling left and right. You know, Pineda, believe it or not, I'm going to say something good about him. He pitched his ass off in this game, but he just wasn't getting the run support. So I'm like, okay. They get two guys on. Gardner comes up, and Gardner hit a moonshot on the wavelength to give the Yankees the lead. And I was with two of my friends who were Cub fans. So, of course, you know, I got my Yankee shit on. I got the bucket hat up. It was cold as balls that day. And he just, oh, my God. You know what, John, since you sent me one, I'm going to send you one.
Okay.
Because you're going to remember this, and you're going to be like, yep, I was watching this game.
Okay.
But, he hit a blast, and that put the Yankees up, and literally you could hear a pin drop. Like, I had never heard Wrigley Field that quiet in all my years of going to baseball games there. That right there just kind of shows you that the Yankees are never necessarily out of a game, right? All right, John, I just sent it.
On Facebook?
Yeah, on Facebook.
Let me see.
Yeah. But no, I like Gardner. I really did. I never had a problem with him. Like, he was a fan favorite. He was gritty. You know, I think he's the type of player that every locker room needs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm watching. He hit that home run. He's screaming as he's going around the plate.
Yeah, I was at that game.
I do remember this because I remember hearing the Cubs broadcast, and they're like, oh, that was, and they were like basically downplaying it because of the fact of that, like, he was showing, what were the exact words? He was showboating too much.
No, he wasn't.
No, they're saying he was too too flamboyant running around the bases.
And
he doesn't need to rub it in their nose.
Yeah, and then 2 days later, I went back, and the game was on Sunday Night Baseball, right?
Okay.
And that game went 18 innings.
Okay.
I was at that one, too.
Wow.
Oh, God, that's, oh, boy.
What?
Hold on.
What's the matter? Breaking news.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You know what? Fuck that. Wait, no, I hit the glitter sound. No. This is the one I wanted. No. What the hell? Fuck, that's a better one. Yeah. There.
Okay.
Shohei Ohtani's just broke 5 minutes ago. His ex-translator negotiated a plea deal by pleading guilty.
Okay, and that means what?
Means we're going to find out how he got his hands on Ohtani's fucking bank account.
So is this good or bad for Ohtani?
Well, whatever the plea deal has to say is not good.
Mm-hmm. And if this comes out that he was?
Again, here's the thing. So, negotiate plea, this broke 5 minutes ago. Former translator Shohei Ohtani has negotiated a plea deal to federal crimes stemming from allegations that he stole millions of dollars from Shohei Ohtani. Like you said, Shohei apparently sent over $4.5 million to a bookie. Was for a gambling gambling debt. But now the question is if he got a plea deal, well, then what is he going to say? And if Shohei did bet on sports, now I'm going to say this. People have to remember, the rule is if he bet on sports, other than baseball, it's a one-year ban. If he bet ball, it's a lifetime ban. People have to remember that before this hits, if he bet on any other sports than baseball, it's only a one-year ban, which means he just goes and rests his shoulder up for next year. All it means. This is going to be interesting. This is something new. But, all right. John, if you want to close up, we got one more baseball topic to talk about.
You could finish it out.
All right, well, let's move on then, and we're going to talk about the problems. Okay, so Major League Baseball, the players' associations have come out to go after Manfred about the pitch clock, saying the pitch clock is the reason for all this Tommy John surgery.
I just want to go on the record as, Christian, haven't I said this all along?
Said what?
About the pitch clock was causing all the arm injuries.
But I'm going to say this. I do not think it's the pitch clock that is causing these arm injuries. Now, over the weekend, Shane Bieber out for the year, Tommy John surgery.
I saw that.
Spencer Strider has a bad arm injury. Don't know what it is yet. And then DeGrom, obviously. Shit like that. So we've had 16 reported Tommy John surgeries during the first 100 days of the calendar year so far. MLB
has been nine. Nine major league ball players for this year have had Tommy John surgery. Now, John, you're saying that you think it is the pitch clock.
Yep.
The last couple years, what has changed in pitching? That if you noticed, maybe you haven't noticed, what has changed in pitching within the last since after COVID?
There's more fireballers in the league than there are finesse pitchers.
Okay. Now, what rule have they changed for fireballers that it actually hurt fireballers?
Speeding them up and making them ramp. They need to ramp things up quicker. You ask my opinion. I know,
but you're missing the one thing that no one's talking about.
In my opinion, I think them ramping it up and making them throw quicker and faster, that means they're gonna ramp up easier, is going to cause more stress on the elbow and the shoulder.
Okay. Christian?
Mm-hmm.
Changed in the last 2 years or 3 years when it's come to pitching?
The pace of the game.
Okay, you're okay. I'm going to say it. How are they holding the ball?
Oh, that's what you mean.
Are you talking about them holding onto the ball tighter?
Yep, which means they have to gear back, and it causes more stress on the back of your shoulder because you're gripping the ball down. So maybe, just maybe, the fact that there's no sticky stuff left on these balls and they're brand-new fucking dirty-ass dry balls. Tyler Glasnow came out and says, you almost have to put a vice grip on these balls. He feels it in his back shoulder every time he gears back the pitch because you can't do rosin and sunscreen anymore. So what happens if you were gripping and then trying to throw 100 miles an hour and then putting torque on your elbow when you're trying to throw an 80-mile-an-hour curveball? Tear your UCL. You pull something in your back. You pull something in your arm. You have to get surgery. Maybe the fact that we don't have the rev speed like we had back in the day with the gripping the baseball, these guys are gearing back and trying to huck 100 miles an hour every time. I'll give you a great example on someone that used to do that, Jacob fucking DeGrom. DeGrom, when he was averaging 92 to 96 miles an hour on his fastball, was he ever hurt?
Who are you talking about now?
DeGrom.
He's been hurt. He's had a bunch of arm issues.
When he was averaging on his fastball 94 to 96 miles an hour, was he ever hurt?
He had some mild shoulder strains here and there.
But was he ever out for the season?
No, not until he started ramping it up.
It had nothing to do with the pitch clock because he was ramping it up, throwing 100 miles an hour before the pitch clock was ever brought in. And that was the second Tommy John surgery he had. Then when the pitch clock all of a sudden comes back, oh, he's hurt again. No, it's because he's gearing back and trying to huck 101 mile an hour fastball. And then trying to throw a 86 mile an hour slider that's literally tearing his shoulder out of socket.
Well, I get where you're coming from, but I'm just like I'm just going to keep with my thing. Is like I definitely think it's got something to do with it. I just think that. With Spencer Strider going out now, more than likely. Christian, I don't know if you heard that. Spencer Strider is more likely out for the year having Tommy John himself.
Oh, there's no rule. Oh. There's no rumor that it's Tommy John. It's shoulder soreness. He's still getting opinions from a specialist. There's no word yet on Tommy
I mean, it's John. Not definitive yet, but...
He's on the 15-day DL.
But more than likely, from what you were telling me, Ronnie, that he's more likely he might be very well done for the year.
That's what it sounds like, but He's on, like I said, he's still getting stuff from specialists and stuff like that.
But if he goes out, I mean, here's a guy who threw 101, 102 miles an hour.
That is wearing his arm out.
Because, again.
His arm would be that with or without the pitch clock.
I mean, you and I, we could debate this
until
the cows come home. You feel the way you feel. I feel the way I feel. I'm not going to change your mind. You're not going to change my mind.
But here's the thing. Nolan Ryan said it the best. There's always been a pitch clock in Major League Baseball. When pitchers started messing with it, Manfred then comes in and says, okay, we need an actual pitch clock. Nolan Ryan said, there's a pitch clock between 12 and 15 seconds.
That's an internal pitch clock for pitchers.
Yes, but that's the thing. There's always been that implemented. Because if you've noticed, after 15 seconds, the batter steps out. Back in the day when it was around there. It's always been an internal pitch clock. Manfred just decided to say, hey, we actually have to speed the game up, so we're actually going to have to implement an actual pitch clock. But there's always been one. And this also goes back to, I keep forgetting the game, but the freaking playoff game that it took five pitches. They literally timed Altuve as a joke. They had Altuve doing an inside the park home run. And how many times he did it between one batter, he was able to score seven times for one batter. Like I understood why they did it because it was there. Now, do I agree with the fact that shortening it was a good idea? No. You should have had it maybe a little bit longer, fine, or keep it what it was. But the pitch clock, in all honesty, it's not as big of a deal as people make it out to be. Maybe if these guys learn actually how to throw a ball and not trying to fireball it and gear back and throw 96 miles or 101 miles an hour, maybe they wouldn't get Tommy John.
But you know what? That also, I'll tell you what exactly. I got to retort to that. This is what is taught to them probably in high school by their fathers or by their high school pitching or their little league or high school pitching coaches.
This is taught by their travel teams.
Well, it's taught by somebody involved in.
No, I'm saying I'm saying by 15 years old, they're taught this. Trust me, I know. I've seen it.
But you see, that in itself is there's your answer, right there.
But it
there's
has,
your answer.
But does that have anything to do with them speeding up? Like, they're going to be on a pace anyway that way, but they're being taught at a young age to chuck 100 miles an hour, to have velocity. And it's like, no, that's why the game – I'm sorry, it's not as much as it is, and you're not the only one that said this, but to them, it's not the pitch clock that's hurting these guys. Maybe more of an annoyance. But it's not the pitch clock hurting these guys. It's the fact that they're throwing 100 miles an hour and then turning around and throwing an 80-mile-an-hour curveball that's destroying their back.
Perfect example. There's a kid in the Mets minor league system, Christian Scott. He's pitched pitching performance, 9 innings, 19 strikeouts. To throw that hard. To get that many strikeouts, I don't know if I've yet to see him really pitch a game because he's been in AAA. I haven't seen him pitch too many games. The guy throws hard. This kid, if he keeps this pace up before the year's out, he's going to blow his arm out. They need to teach this kid to slow it down a little bit, maybe not throw as hard, because he's one of the Mets' future rotation guys. This guy could be, they're already comparing him to DeGrom. Not built like DeGrom, but they're saying he's DeGrom-esque. He keeps going the rate he's going with how hard he's throwing. He's going to have TJ before the year's out. Matthew Allen threw hard. Where's Matthew Allen now? Done.
Yeah. Like, there's a kid that was in college last year, Ben Joyce.
I remember hearing that name.
Clocked out, has the world record for fastest pitch ever. Would you like to guess what the pitch, how fast the pitch was?
108.
Nah, less, a little less than that. Christian, what do you think?
104.
Close. He was a little bit faster than Geraldus Chapman at 105.5.
Wow.
Chapman was 104.8 because Chapman had the record. Now, I'm sorry, if this kid tops out at 105, hell, even one pitch an inning, how much damage is that doing to his arm?
A tremendous amount, because this he could start one game and his career could start and finish in one day. Essentially.
But that's the thing, like, and like I said, as much as it is the pitch clock being an annoyance, I think there's more to this than just that. I think there's no kid, even at a young age, that is being taught, like, not just velocity, but they're not being taught how to hit their marks.
Well, you know what? In essence, this goes back to your short attention span kid. They want to see guys throwing fast, you know, like as fast as they can and all that stuff, because that's just going to say, that's going to, you know, by doing that, they're going to also speed up the game and stuff like that. And they're going to be like, oh, I want to emulate that. They need to start teaching these kids not to throw fire 99.9% of the time. That's what they need to stop doing. They go, you want to fire, you know, you want to fire it up to get a strike three? Great. You do it once every hitter possibly if you can. But don't do it every pitch, because that's going to end up hurting them in the long run. But that's just my thoughts.
Christian, what's your thoughts on this?
What, about the whole Tommy John thing?
About, like, what is it? Is it these kids throwing ridiculously quick? Is it the pitch clock? Is it mechanics at the young age? Like,
I mean, you could say it's a mix of everything all together. You know, pace yourself. You know, why do you think guys like Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux were able to pitch at an advanced age? Because they weren't throwing too hard. You know, they were just working on placing the ball in the strike zone. Correct me if I'm wrong here. But,
no, you're not wrong at all.
You know, why do you think CeCe was able to pitch well into, you know, his late 30s?
Bartolo Colon.
But yeah, Big Sexy. Well, man, when you got a nickname, Big Sexy, you can do anything. You know, like CeCe, I remember saying a couple of years before he retired that he was working with Andy Pettit. That's another one. You know, and I don't know what it is, but it's something about a lefty. Like, Glavine was a lefty, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, Glavine was a lefty. You know, CeCe was a lefty. Andy Pettit was a lefty. I don't know. Like, lefties just always seem to be in control of the game when they're on the mound. Yeah, and I mean, in 2017, at one point, CeCe was 7-2.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't throwing that hard. He was just working on placement and movement. You know, yeah, when you get older, you're not throwing that hard. But he, like, the hardest he could throw was probably 89. And he was still firing the ball into the strike zone. So, yeah, you know, it's not all about throwing the ball and trying to get it into the strike zone. It's just all about making the guy miss, I feel.
Yep.
No, you're right. I don't disagree with you in any way, shape, or form. The fact that there are no finesse pitchers in baseball anymore, really.
No.
The
only one that I think may be a finesse pitcher, because he doesn't even really throw that hard, is Nestor Cortez.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nestor's a finesse guy.
Yeah, he's a finesse guy.
Kirby, the kid out of Texas.
Kirby Yates?
Not Yates. Oh, God damn it.
But I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But the fact that pitching coaches, parents, traveling baseball are teaching kids throw as hard as you can, they'll never be able to catch up to it.
I honestly think that's the reason why Carlos Rodon has kind of bounced back, because he's not throwing as hard now as he was.
You know, but the fact that these kids are not being taught, sitting them down, and even though I was never really a big fan of his, but you can't argue with results. Look at the Greg Maddoxes, like you said, the Greg Maddoxes, the Tom Glavins, the Gaylord Perrys, the Raleigh Fingers. These guys painted the corners with change-ups, sliders, curveballs, and stuff like that, that made a hitter, you know, have to adjust himself. When you got pure heat coming at you, like Nolan Ryan was a friggin' anomaly.
So was Randy Johnson.
Randy Johnson and Nolan Ryan were friggin' anomalies. They threw it hard, and you weren't catching up to it no matter how good a hitter you were.
But also, Randy Johnson was almost 7 foot.
I remember when I saw him pitch up close.
It's like Zach Eadie throwing a fucking fastball.
I literally remember when I saw him pitch up close. Randy Johnson?
Yeah,
I saw him in 2006 with the Yankees. And he almost threw a no-hitter, actually. Like, he took a no-hitter into the bottom of the seventh inning.
Right.
So he threw a no-hitter for 6 2/3. And, man, I don't want to say it was peak Yankees necessarily, but, you know, Jeter was a little older. Jeter was around my age. Young Robinson, Cano, A-Rod, Posada. Like, the core four was still there, and I think Bernie was still there as well. And once he gave up the hit, they were playing the White Sox. Once he gave up that hit, he gave up a home run. Then Torrey, that's how long ago this was.
Yeah.
Torrey just decided to take him out the game. Torrey went to the bullpen, and it was just simple. Look, bullpen, don't F this up. Let's just get the ball to Mariano. Mariano closed the door.
By the way, I was wrong. It was in Texas. It was Seattle Mariners, George Kirby.
Yeah.
George Kirby, okay. Yeah, I remember the name. But the whole thing is, like, their parents, coaches right now are teaching kids the wrong way to pitch, in my opinion. Because I've seen a few high school games here and there through my girlfriend's school and stuff like that. And I hear the coaches saying, throw it high and hard, they'll never catch up to it. That's what they're telling these kids. You know, throw it high and hard, which is meaning throw a fastball high up to the letters above, you know, just at the top of the strike zone. They'll never catch up to it.
Yeah, up and in.
Up and in. He'd be saying low, outside, curveball. Because 90% of the hitters are going to expect what? They're going to expect the heat. And they're going to be looking for the heat. And they're going to prepare themselves for the heat. And if they're preparing for the heat and you throw an 85 mile an hour change up, they're gonna nine out of ten out of them are gonna swing and miss. And that's the way I think coaches. Like, if I had a kid and he was playing baseball, I wouldn't teach him to throw hard. I'd teach him to throw, be finesse guy.
Yeah, because, you know, look, when I was playing football, I remember the first year I played, and even before stepping on the field, I was always throwing the ball with my friends in the neighborhood, right? And they used to love the way I threw the ball because it was a tight spiral and everything. But, you know, spirals don't really mean much of anything. It's can you get the ball to your receiver, right?
Right, right.
It's all about ball placement, or as I like to say, throwing your receiver open, which I'll explain in a minute. And when you're a quarterback, you got to get rid of the ball quickly, man. Like, you can't hold on to it too long, or else you're going to get sacked, or my personal favorite, you're going to get benched. So when I tried out, you know, I had a habit of, unfortunately, holding on to the ball too long. And it was defeating a little bit, but unfortunately, I played in an era where I played dad ball. Ronnie knows what I'm talking about.
I don't know what dad ball is. So.
Dad ball is when certain players on your football team, their dads are coaching. So they're going to get special treatment. Oh, my son's going to play quarterback. He may suck, but my son's going to play quarterback. That's what dad ball is. And then that's when I became an offensive lineman, and then I fell in love with the defensive side of the football as well. But, yeah, man, it's not all about throwing the prettiest ball. Can it get to your intended receiver is the most important thing. Like, one guy who had to change it up, literally, John, mm-hmm. is a guy who is now one of the best quarterbacks of all time, Peyton Manning.
Yep.
Because when he got to Denver, you know, he lost arm strength. So as a defender, when he was in Denver, you were okay with playing his receivers off in zone coverage, right? Like, you weren't going to do that when he was in Indianapolis. And then on top of that, he had the luxury of throwing in a dome.
Right.
Peyton threw a lot of clunkers and a lot of wobblers. Ronnie, you remember that when he was in Denver?
Yeah, because it was noodle arm.
Yeah. He threw a lot of clunkers. Like, he couldn't throw it as, you know, as tight down the field as he once did, even past his prime.
I mean, let's face it. The defense carried him to that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He just had to manage the game. Exactly. It was not that the offense was there not to lose him the game.
Bingo. Because how many times throughout Peyton's career was it the other way around?
Yep. Yeah, no defense. The first Super Bowl he won. No defense.
Right. But, you know, you have guys like Brady. And I even remember saying that these last couple years he was in Tampa Bay, he seemed to throw the ball better as he got older.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because he's also a freak. He was also a freak in nature that, I mean, kept his body in shape.
Yeah, he was.
Sounds like anyone that was talking about LeBron to MJ. Oh, Jesus Christ. That shit was making me laugh. But, all right. That's really it for baseball news. Unless there's something you guys want to talk about with baseball.
I got nothing.
Can move on. Move on to some basketball real quick. Christian, congratulations has to go out to South Carolina women, beating Iowa to get the national title.
I was trying to tell you.
Would you like to guess what the rating was for this game?
Like 18 million?
A little more, 19.5.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I watched that game.
Yeah, so did I. Like, watch that before WrestleMania came on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of it, but I know I heard things about it, but I didn't watch a single thing about it.
Yeah,
so
Caitlin Clark won the Wooden Award, which is the Player of the Year. There's one thing that was said that made me laugh that's been going on Twitter. So the South Carolina coach Staley has come out and in her press conference started talking about transgender athletes playing with women, which, whatever, it's been known to death on what this is, but the woman that the Kentucky swimmer, I'm trying to think of her name, Riley Gaines, put out a tweet about this, calling it ridiculous and kind of like why the hell are you doing this? Why are you saying stuff like this? This makes no sense. You're trying to set women's sports back God knows how long, which then someone decided to tweet at her, how many national titles do you have? And just to gloat, she holds up a hand with all five rings that she has for swimming and national titles going, I have about five. How many do you got? And it's just, I don't get it. Why? It's because it's, I understand why people are doing it, because it's going to cause, obviously, attention. But yet when NCAA put a transgender division or an open division in swimming, they had to cancel it because no one signed up.
Okay.
So, but that just screams that it makes no sense. Like, okay, you want to do this, but then why? That's like them saying Caitlin Clark go play with the Detroit Pistons. Hell, she might be one of the best players on the team, but it wouldn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like Caitlin Clark, yeah, go guard Draymond Green. Eesh. Not gonna happen. It turns into five on four. I'm sorry, as good as she is. Oh yeah, go guard Steph Curry. Yeah, not happening. The other thing is too is congratulations to Stanford's ex-coach, Vanderveer, is retiring after 38 seasons. She is the all-time winningest coach in NCAA history.
Yeah, I think she's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, hands down. I don't know if
no,
she's
I think
in
she's
yet.
Already in, is what I'm saying.
Is she in? I don't know.
Hey,
but
I'm about to look it up.
I mean, she's first ballot. Hold the door open. Let her right in.
And who is this now?
The women's coach for Stanford. She holds the record for 1,216 victories in her entire career.
Yeah.
So what's her name? That's what I'm saying.
Tara Vanderveer.
Okay, I have heard. Believe it or not, as much as I don't follow that, I've actually heard that name.
Yeah, she went in 2011.
The three let's put it this way. The three most famous coaches in women's sports is her, Gito, and Pat Summitt.
Man, you better put some respect on Dawn Staley's name.
Oh, that's true, Dawn Staley. But is she
at you had a little bass in your voice saying that, Christian.
Well, wait, what I'm saying, though, is to the casual fans, are they going to know who that is?
If you follow the game, you will.
But if you follow the game, you're going to know a lot of things that the casual fans don't. The casual fans know those three coaches. Just like the casual basketball player knows who Coach K is.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, hell, the casual fan's going to know who Bobby Knight is too.
Right, exactly. But that's
I remember when I met him.
Who, Bobby Knight?
Yeah.
That motherfucker was intense. I remember, you guys don't remember, you may or may not remember. I remember him in his earliest days.
I went to the Final Four in 2010. And I met most of the game day guys. Billis, Hubert Davis, Digger Phelps, and Bob Knight was on set with him. Yeah, he was a dick.
But you know what? He might have been a dick, but you can't argue with the success he produced.
Nah, you can't. I mean, without him, we don't know Isaiah Thomas, and we don't know Mike Krzyzewski.
The guy, you know, it's like you can't sit here and tell me that some of these players wouldn't be where they are if it weren't for somebody like a Bobby Knight. What's that guy? Jimmy V or Johnny? Jimmy V, I think.
Yeah, Jimmy V.
Jimmy V.
I mean, we have a foundation. They have a foundation meant for him. Like that.
And I mean, and this is from a guy who's not a college basketball guy. It's like you got the Rick Pitinos. The where's the guy that was?
He's another asshole.
But again, asshole, yes, but you can't argue with the success. What was that guy? He coached the Knicks 1 year, and then he Calipari.
Yep.
John Calipari.
I can't stand him.
I agree with that one.
But I know, regardless of how you feel about them personally, you can't argue with the success they had. That's what I'm trying to say.
Now I got one. I'll say one.
As much
name.
As I hate that bitch, Sasha, you know who? I can't argue with her accomplishments.
No,
even though I hate her. I hate her guts.
Now, Christian, I'm going to say one coach that on the East Coast, we know who she is as a basketball coach. To everyone else, if they know her, it is for a completely different reason. How many casual fans do you think, for basketball reasons, know who Vivian Stringer is?
Right.
Hell, I even know that name. I can't remember from what, but I remember hearing that name.
I will say, and I quote, a Don Imus quote.
Oh, is this a nappy-headed hose thing?
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay. That's cost Don Imus' career.
Career, yep. And what I'm saying is, though, is to the casual fan, is anyone going to know who she is?
Yes,
for basketball.
Probably not, but they're going to only know her from that, from the instance of, from the whole Imus thing.
Exactly. And
that's disrespectful as fuck what he said. And fuck Don Imus, let him rot in his fucking grave.
Because he wouldn't say that shit about no white girl.
That is a whole different argument. That the fact that he said that live on radio on the airwaves is a whole different reason, and not gonna lie, kind of glad he did to get him the fuck off of the fan.
But you know, it's like it was a disrespectful piece of shit, and he got what he deserved for that, even though he came out and apologized. I'm sorry, apologizing for that, you can't apologize what you put that once that hit the airwaves. You can't take something like that back.
But what I'm getting at, though, is you see, you're saying this as is. You know that name, but not for her basketball coaching.
Oh. And the fact that I only know her for one thing.
Right. But to me and Christian, we followed, as much as we don't, at that time, probably didn't follow the game the way we should have, we still followed the game. We knew who she was and how good Rutgers was then. And then, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, but to a normal casual fan, they're going to know her for that, not for how good of a coach she was.
Right.
But, and that's what I'm getting at. Like, you go to, and then it's the same that goes with the men. The casual fan is not going to know who I can't even freaking think of a random fucking team They're not going to know who the coach of St. Peter's is. That's now at Seton Hall. You're not going to know who. They're not going to know who the hell the coach of Loyola State College Chicago is. They're not going to know that. They're going to know the stories from, say, the tournaments, but they're not going to know the coaches. They're not going to know the players.
Right.
They're going to know the players when they go to the NBA, if they do. If they do. But it's – like, that's what I'm saying. Staley, like, as much as the diehard basketball fans will know who she is, the casuals won't. And South Carolina's been fucking amazing. What was it, like 103 wins to 3 losses in the course of 4 years?
Yeah, she's the best coach in women's college basketball.
Yeah.
Right now.
Right now, yeah. And it hasn't gotten attention, as much as attention as it did. Unfortunately, I hate to say it this way, until, you know, people started paying attention to Caitlin Clark. Then it started bringing eyes to the whole game.
You're not wrong. But it's unfortunate that some people are going to be known for one thing because of something derogatory.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
sorry, John, go ahead.
No, no, I mean, it's just disgraceful. I mean, some of these, like, I can name a bunch of baseball guys that went down. I mean, I can mention one name. You'll know exactly what he was famous for, even though his career was not that great. He's going to be known for one thing. Armando Galarraga.
Yeah.
I say that name, what instantly comes to your mind? Both of you.
He was an asshole.
Yeah.
No, Armando Galarraga was that Detroit pitcher that threw the no-hitter when Jim Joyce fucked up the call at first base.
Oh, I was thinking about Andres Galarraga.
No, Armando Galarraga was
the
Detroit pitcher.
That, but nah, you know what stood out to me about that whole situation? That umpire umped the next game. He brought the lineup card out and just, like, consoled him. Like, he didn't bash him. He handled it with class.
I know, but still, it's like, it's unfortunate that Armando Galarraga's career was, he's no Nolan Ryan. In fact, I don't even think he's playing anymore. But still, he's going to go down in history books. It's like, nobody's going to say, oh, what was he pitching like? No, he's the guy who had his perfect game screwed up by an umpire call.
He's in Venezuela right now. He's in the Venezuelan leagues.
But still, I'm just saying, it's just like.
No, I'm saying he's still pitching, but I'm saying that's where he is now.
But the point I'm trying to make is, like, you mentioned his name, and he's only going to be known for one thing. The pitcher that had a perfect game taken away from him by an umpire's bad call. And it's like how we opened the show. You name Angel Hernandez, a million things are going to go flooded to his fucking head. You're going to come to your head about that piece of shit. And Christian, did you see it? You saw that Yankee game where he fucked the ball up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't here for that. What's your take on that whole situation? You weren't here when Ronnie and I discussed that earlier.
What, from over the weekend?
Yeah.
Okay, refresh my memory. I heard about it, but...
The Marlins pitcher stepped off the rubber, threw the quick pitch to home plate. The ball was practically above his letters and was called a strike, and the inning was over.
I mean, look, are we really going to continue to complain about Angel Hernandez? This is what he does.
No, we're going to... You know what's going to have to happen? And I've been thinking about this. Major League Baseball fans all over the world, we're going to have to start a petition to get him kicked out of baseball. You get a couple million signatures for him to get thrown out of baseball, that's when Manfred will start taking it seriously. Normally, they need 25,000 signatures to get something done. You get over a million, guarantee you, I'd be willing to put money on it that Manfred will say, all right, Hernandez, you're gone. You're history. That's what needs to happen. A petition needs to be distributed to everybody that's open to anybody. I guarantee you'll get 1,000,001 signatures before a week is out. if not more. But go off the tangent, Ronnie, but we were talking about names, and I forgot we never got Christian's take on the whole Angel Hernandez thing. But go ahead.
That's all good. Hey, Christian, you want to take your victory lap about Purdue?
About what?
About Purdue.
Why would I do that when I had UConn winning the whole thing?
That's not nice. But I'm saying, you say Big Ten can't win shit.
No, they don't. They don't. I mean, I'll give Purdue credit. You know, they bounced back nicely after being embarrassed in the tourney last year. But, Purdue just wasn't a good matchup for UConn. Like, UConn literally had no weaknesses. They could shoot. They could go inside. They could play outside. They could run transition. And they played defense.
They did not, what's it called? They did not lose, They didn't lose any game by spread. They covered every game they played.
Yeah, and look, this was a first for me because I actually got both the men and women's title prediction right. Because I had South Carolina for the women from the jump, and I had UConn men's team from the jump.
Yeah, I didn't get the game right, but I got the teams right. So I had Iowa, South Carolina in the finals.
Yeah. Nah, I hear you. Nah, it was a fun tournament. On both ends. It always is. Sucks. My boys were the first one seed to go home.
Happens.
Yeah, but that's the one thing. That's why I don't really care for Hubert Davis too much, because Hubert doesn't adjust. If you know a guy is continuously killing you, why wouldn't you? And that's what happened down the stretch of that game. But I'm just happy Duke went home. That's it.
I bet you are.
And watch, they won't be shit next year either.
I'm interested to see whatever the new recruit that comes in. Apparently,
Listen, Ronnie, they do this every year with these recruits. Remember, this is the most hyped up Duke team I've heard about since the one with Zion, RJ, and Cam Reddish. They had prospects 1, 2, and 3, and couldn't make the final four.
Well, Zion couldn't stop. Stuff in his damn face.
And Duke needs some better shooting. Nah, Duke ain't winning nothing next year.
I don't know if they're going to win anything next year, but it should be interesting to see what they do. I think they're going to do better than what Kentucky did and what...
John Calipari is the Italian version of Doc Rivers.
Well, he's not at Kentucky anymore.
I know.
He's in Arkansas.
Yep.
I don't know how to feel about that. That, to me, is very interesting that he's there. And it's all about the money.
Right? I mean, I think Kentucky needs a fresh voice because, look, since 2012, what has Kentucky done? Like, their last really good team was in 2014/15,
where
they were undefeated, and then they lost in the Final Four.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
I mean, look, I think he was forced out, personally.
I agree with that.
Hasn't won an Natty since 2012, I don't even think, he's gotten back to one, and they lost to UConn.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Again, Edie wins the – what an award. That's not a surprise. He is one of the best – was one of the best college basketball players in the country.
He was the best college basketball player. He was the best.
Can't teach size, that's for damn sure.
Yeah.
They already, so the question is do they three-peat?
I mean, it's going to be tough because I have a feeling Kentucky is going to, I think Kentucky's going to interview Hurley.
No, so it looks like Kentucky is going to go with the coach out of Baylor.
Oh, Scott Drew?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Or Billy Donovan.
Donovan, I mean, it depends on. You know what? Yeah, you say that. Yeah, I mean, the way the Bulls treated him last night, you know, by blowing out by missing a fucking rim and then blowing out his fucking knee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, right now odds came out for way too early in the season, and Kentucky obviously is 10-1 to win the whole thing. Your Tar Heels are 20, and Arizona's 15. Houston, which is bringing back everybody, is 15. That's an interesting bet.
Who, Houston?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. They're kind of in the same category as Gonzaga. Where they have good regular seasons, but can't put it together in the tournament. I mean, look, they've been a one seed the last 2 years and have lost in a Sweet 16.
And it always seems like they get a weird injury, too, halfway through.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, if that guard doesn't hurt his ankle, they beat Duke. Just call it what it is. That's why, honestly, I needed North Carolina State to do the work of the Lord that day, and damn it, they did it.
Okay, John, what are you showing us?
All right, on the thing, I saw this. Somebody sent me this. A friend of mine sent me this who's a Jets fan. Now, these are a bunch of guys that have been talked about that the Jets are going to look at before the draft, and I wanted to get Christian's take on these guys. Because I don't know if they'd be impactful, are they worth the shot? I don't know a lot about them. That's why, Christian, you're more of the expert, and you're the king of this. So this is why I'm asking your opinion on these players.
Where'd you send it? On Skype?
I sent it on Skype.
Yeah, on Skype. I was going to say.
Let me see. God, why can't I ever find these comments? Oh, there we go. Okay. I'm in it. Let's see. You got names for any of these guys?
I'll pull it. Hold on. Let me pull up the names. I'll go back to where I saw them. Hold on.
Don't worry, Christian. You might not know any of these guys. They're all fucking, they're all group of five schools.
Well, one of them I recognize already.
One's LSU, so.
No, and the Penn State guy I recognize.
Let's see. Let me see if I can pull up.
Oh, yeah.
Let me see if I can pull up the names. Hold on. One of them, the one with the number 11, the red, is Makari Corley,
okay.
Wide receiver. The number 8 kid is wide receiver Malik
Nabers.
Nabers.
Yeah.
Nabers will be gone by the time I get to the Jets.
Number 40 is Chop Robinson.
Yep. From Penn State.
The Colorado State guy is Dohamed Kamara. And the quarterback is Stanford quarterback Michael Hyers. And there was another one I didn't send it to. It was quarterback Jordan Travis.
Now that's the motherfucker I want.
Yeah, but
And then there was one other name is USC wide receiver Brendan Rice.
That's Jerry Rice's son.
Yeah, that's Jerry Rice's son.
All right, but the ones I sent you are, do you see any of them landing with the Jets? And if any of them do land with the Jets, would any of them be an impact player?
I mean, Malik Nabers, if he would have dropped, yeah, because the Jets need, like, the biggest question mark right now surrounding the Jets is their offense, because just think, look at it like this, John. This is me in no way, shape, or form bashing the Jets. These are just the facts, right? Like, with the Jets, they come in with a lot of question marks because, one, the offensive line's been very inconsistent, right?
Correct.
Two, you have a quarterback that's coming back 40 years old off a major injury. He's not younger. He's older now. And he hasn't played in a competitive football game since the end of the 2022 season.
Okay.
So he's going to be rusty early on, and I'm just kind of sensing things amongst a lot of Jets fans now that I'm back out this way. You know, remember around this time last year, Jet fans were ecstatic about this. And, you know, him coming to East Rutherford. And now I don't feel or have – I don't sense that same type of optimism with the Jets like I did prior to the year going into training camp. And then, look, Ronnie and I called that game last year, right?
Okay.
And, you know, when he went down, everything was kind of deflated. But my thing about the Jets is this. They're in a competitive conference. And remember, they're in a conference with the defending Super Bowl champs who just repeated.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore is better than the Jets. Miami is better than the Jets. Buffalo is better than the Jets. Houston is going to be good this year. The Chargers are going to be good. The Bengals are going to be good with a healthy Joe Burrow. Yeah, you know, I just see a guy like a Chop Robinson having an impact. I think he's the type of guy that Robert Saleh likes because he is a former defensive coordinator, and you saw what he was able to do with Eric Armstead and Nick Bosa. He turned them into the best pass rushing duo in the National Football League. Chop has, no pun intended, very choppy and violent hands. He's quick to the ball, and he just knows how to pursue the ball. He can get after the quarterback. He can stop the run, and he's very nimble yet smooth on his feet. And, you know, I think he would be good with the Jets, but there's a possibility, you know, he's definitely a first rounder, but I don't know if he's top 10 because there are some other guys I put ahead of him, like a guy like a Jarrett Burst, but I think he's going to be gone by the time the Jets pick. Dallas Turner, he played for Alabama last year for Nick Saban. He is probably going to be gone more than likely, but you never know. If Chop doesn't get selected in the first round, there's always the next day, the second round of the draft. Because guys who are expected to be selected in the first round sometimes don't even hear their name called on the first day.
The Jets don't have a second round pick this year.
Yeah, because that goes to Green Bay.
It goes to Green Bay, yep. I will tell you right now, like me and you have talked about this, I think the Jets would probably, if they're not going to get a lineman, they're going to get someone like Brock Bauer.
I could see it.
In reality, if Bauer is there or Joe Alt is there, I'm taking Joe Alt.
Nah, Joe Alt won't be there.
No, but I'm saying if that's my pick, I'm taking Alt because Alt's a fucking Hall of Famer.
I'm gonna do another episode of Monday Evening Quarterback the week of the draft. You in?
When are you planning on doing that?
You want to do it that Monday, the week of the draft, like we did last year?
Yeah, and then Thursday I'm probably gonna do a draft show.
Yeah, I'll try to stop by for that.
Okay. But John, the thing is though, is like, The one thing that is going to be that no one picks up on is this year's draft is very heavy on offensive linemen
and
wide receivers, which are the two biggest keys the Jets need. So
right.
They can wait until the fourth round, third and fourth round, and there's still going to be plethora of guys that they can just get.
I know, but I just happened to see, because like I said, a friend of mine who's a Jet fan sent me that going, look at, you might, don't be surprised to see a bunch of these guys as Jets. And then that's why he just sent it to me. That's why I put him in the Skype chat so you could see what I was talking about.
Yeah, but I think someone like Malik Nabers is going to be gone by then. Like I said, a guy like Joe Wall, Joe Wall's probably going to go to San Diego. LA.
Now say it right, Ronnie. Say it right.
No, I'm talking to the Chargers, not the Rams.
Oh, but still, when you say that name, you got to say it the right way.
No, there's a difference. The Chargers actually mean something out there. Not the Rams. Have to leave St. Louis and go out to L.A.
There you go.
I mean, you can get, like I said, it's heavy. This year, a lot of the top 100 players are linemen and wide receivers.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a very weak defensive class.
Okay.
Now, the kid out of Florida State that you were talking about, that's the kid that I want to back up Rodgers.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yeah. He's the guy that...
You talking Jarrett Verse?
No.
Jordan Travis. Yeah.
That's the guy I want, because he might make it to the third round, because no one's going to touch him because of his broken leg.
I could also see the Jets potentially making a move for MPJ, Michael Penix Jr.
So with that, they would have to move up. They would have to get to the second round.
Right.
There was another guy that he just sent me. Who's Rome?
Rome Adunze, love him.
Yes.
Listen to me what I'm about to say.
Okay.
He's probably the second best wide receiver in this draft class. Like, he is coming off a year where I thought he was one of the two or three best wide receivers in college football last year. He's athletic. He knows how to track the ball. He catches everything. He moves well in space to free himself to get open. And he knows how to run every route. And he's coming off a team that just made the national championship.
So where do you see him? Do you see him going first round? Is he a first rounder?
Oh, he's top six. Yeah.
Yeah. The Jets would almost have to move up to get him. He might fall to them.
Like, the furthest I see him going is probably 9 to the Bears.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was the last one I said. I just sent him. Are you sending me any more? He goes, no, that's all he had.
I'm going to give you a name that the Jets can get in the third round as a wide receiver. The last name is going to sound familiar. And Christian, this is where having me going into the group of five schools, you're going to love. Wide receiver out of Rice College, Luke McCaffrey.
Oh, Christian's brother?
Yep.
Yeah.
That is someone that the Jets should target.
And, I can see it.
Oh, and please do, because you, him in the slot, that's dangerous to get past to hell. He has hands like his brother. That's terrifying to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And the 182nd round pick is what? 182 is fourth round?
Yeah, it's like fourth or fifth round, I think.
Jets should definitely think about that. Someone the Jets should definitely think about.
Right. I can see that.
Yeah. Like I said, the skill that is in the wide receiver range is insane. I'm just looking at this, Jordan. It's like going through. What do the Jets need? It's like every fucking wide receiver that's on this list is just holy crap. I haven't heard that name in a while. Tackle Brandon Coleman from TCU.
Yeah, that's a name I haven't heard in a while either.
Yeah, he's in the draft. As I say, that's a guy that can back up like the end of a draft. In like a 6-7 round, get him as a tackle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that there's a lot of good names in this draft that the Jets are sitting pretty.
What number are they picking at now?
They got 10th for the first round, and then I think they got a high two. Or
now,
high three.
When is the draft now?
2 weeks.
Date. No, give me a date so I can put it on my calendar so I can watch. Date.
Two weeks from tomorrow. The 21st.
Oh, so it's right after I come. Oh,
25th.
Okay, so it's not going to be the weekend I'm away. Okay. But no, I don't, because I might actually watch that, because the Jets, like you said, I know the Jets are in need of a lot of help. And I want them to have an impactful draft.
The thing is, the one thing that I've been noticing, and Christian, I understand what you're saying, but it is as clear as day, the Jets have gone all in. Yes, it's, hey, we're signing a bunch of young guys, a bunch of old guys to one-year, two-year contracts and that, and we have a quarterback that blew out his Achilles. But just don't be surprised if the Jets actually the Jets have a chance to win this division.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
From what I've been reading and what I've been hearing, the Bills are going to take a step back again.
I don't think they are, to be honest with you. They're the best team in this division. Like, seriously, because New England's in a rebuild. The Dolphins, to me, are the biggest threat to Buffalo. The Jets, they have too many question marks. Remember, Aaron Rodgers is 40 years old, coming off an Achilles injury. The offensive line is Swiss cheese. There's a lot of pressure on their defense to really carry this team. But the offense has to step up.
But the offensive line, so here's the thing. The biggest question for the offensive line is, yes, if they stay healthy. And I'm not even talking about left tackle. All right, fine. You're going to need another left tackle to cover that up, because God forbid he's not staying healthy all year.
And remember, they just signed Mike Williams, and he can't stay healthy. So across the board, there's some uncertainty. Yeah.
But you got to remember, Elijah Vera Tucker is still coming back. Yes, he's kind of been hurt twice. But he is back, so we have a question mark on him, yes. But it's still something better. It's still – the Jets have a lot of what-ifs. But again, if it is a what-if they stay healthy, well, they're –
they're Super Bowl or bust then.
Yeah, and the reason why I say Buffalo is because, yeah, they did lose Stephon Diggs, right? But now this forces them to kind of run the ball a little bit more. And, you know, until Josh Allen can get on the same page with those receivers. You know, out of every quarterback in this division, he's the only one I trust.
So Vegas has, as of right now, the Buffalo Bills at 10.5 wins stretched to the under.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so they actually have the Jets and Buffalo even.
Yeah,
so the Bills have 10.5 laid to the under, which is 10. Their win total's 10, and the Jets are 9.5 juiced to the over, which is 10. They have them tied, and I don't even know what they have. I don't even know what they have Miami, but New England's like 4. Like yeah, they're not doing it. But Miami, I think Miami is. Like 9?
You know, honestly, I think they take a step back.
9.5, shoot to the over. So they have them at 10, too.
Because the problem I have with Miami, they can't beat good teams. And you saw that toward the end of last season. Because if I'm going to be honest with you, they should have beat Dallas. I mean, mm-hmm. Dallas should have beat them on Christmas Eve. You saw what happened when they go into Baltimore. Baltimore comes in and punches them in the mouth, right? And then, look, they could have won that game against Buffalo to the side of the division, but Buffalo just turned on that pedigree when it mattered. What most ended up winning the division, and that's how Miami ended up in frigid Kansas City for that playoff game.
And I'm gonna give you a team right now that a lot of people are sleeping on. Don't sleep on Cleveland.
Yeah, but for Cleveland, it depends on can Deshaun Watson stay healthy.
I'm saying, well, again, another question mark. It's that offense is ridiculous, but then you also have Deshaun Watson. Oh, and I'll say this: the one thing about the Jets that you kind of didn't factor in is Zach Wilson's not the backup quarterback.
Man, ain't nobody care.
I'd rather – listen, Tyrod Taylor being the backup quarterback gets you at least more wins than Zach Wilson did. They had 7 wins with Wilson as the backup quarterback. You're telling me Tyrod Taylor's not good for 3 of them?
Nobody care. Ain't nobody care. Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're not giving me the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you a team that's going to be fucking terrible this year is going to be the fucking Bears.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that. And then I think the Lions are going to take a little bit of a step back this year.
I can see that.
Because they're going to be hunted and not hunters at this point. I mean, the Lions are coming off an NFC Championship game appearance. Whoever would have thought? The Detroit Lions were a game away from the Super Bowl. You know, because I think Green Bay is going to be really good this year. I personally could see Green Bay coming out the NFC.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. What's the odds? Green Bay is the second favorite at 2-1 as of now.
Who's the first, San Francisco?
No. To win the North, the Detroit Lions are there. What is Frisco's odds to win the West? It's probably like minus. Yeah, minus 215. You have a Arizona team that ain't doing shit. You have a Seattle team that's rebuilding, and a Rams team that doesn't have their Hall of Fame defensive tackle. Yeah, that's the
Yeah, I think the Rams are going to kind of surprise some people next year. No, they don't have Aaron Donald anymore, but they have, it's going to take a collective effort to replace him, and they have a lot of youth on that defense.
Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see that. Hey, John, I think we're going to push off Mania until Ryan's on with us.
That's fine, because I was just looking at the clock, too, and... Yeah, I do want to bring this back, bring this home pretty soon. Yeah. So,
what? Yeah, Ashley, I'm gonna get out of here now, guys. I just wanted to come on and talk to y'all.
All right, later, Chris.
All right, later.
Last thing I want to talk about, and I'll talk about it real quick. Masters starts tomorrow. Notable people on the card and betting wise, Tiger Woods is 150-1. You want to talk about a long shot? Great. I don't think that's going to happen. Tiger Woods has to have everything go right, and it's supposed to be raining. It's already raining in Atlanta, right?
Well, I don't know. That's why they supposedly postponed the game beforehand, because they assumed it was going to rain. And I just checked the weather, and they said, yeah, it is raining in Atlanta. So,
which means humidity, Tiger's back, Tiger's legs. Yeah, it's not going to go well for him.
Because the next Met game is scheduled for – the next Atlanta Met game is scheduled for 12:20 tomorrow. They assume they're going to have clear sailing by tomorrow.
Yeah. Guys that I would lay right now, Rory at 9-1. Tony Finau at 45-1. Siwoo Kim for a top five, I would definitely play because he's 60-1 to win the whole thing. I don't think he's going to do that. And also as top Korean. Which, yes, by the way, that is a bet on Caesar Sportsbook. You can bet the top Asian.
That just sounds fucked up.
It really is.
I'm sorry. Just the top, yeah, saying top race, it just sounds fucked up.
I mean, you can bet top American, top English.
That's a bet that should be just thrown the hell out, because that's just wrong on so many fucking levels.
Well, there's so many people that are in this.
I understand that, but you don't need to be discussing something like that. That's just something I'm sorry. I call bullshit on that one. That's the thing that shouldn't be happening. But that's just my opinion.
Let's see.
That's almost as bad as saying, oh, who's the top white guy in this sport? You know, you don't do that.
Siwoo Kim plus 150 for top 20. Definitely would take that.
Right.
I mean, I would almost put together if I was going to do a parlay, I would almost do a Rory top five. Let's see what this actually would come out to. Rory top five. Xander Schauble top 10 with a Salvatore top 10, and then a Siwoo Kim top 20. Which parlay that to get? Oh, are they not actually letting me parlay that? That's bullshit. All right, what if I did five? Let's see something real quick. $20 gets you 60. That's terrible. That's not good. I would not take that. That's not even worth the fucking money for a four-day event.
Right.
Rory, I think Rory's going to win this and get his Tiger Slam. But...
I mean, it's like, we'll see. I mean, like I said, I really don't follow golf like you do. You know?
I mean, this is the first. It's the first Masters. It's the mess. It's the fucking Masters. It's the first major of the year. It's one of the biggest. These are the ones, like they said, where the casual fans will watch.
Right.
This is it. Like, this is the one where, like, right now they have an odds boost where it's like Sungjae Im, Phil Mickelson, or Ricky Fowler will win the Masters at 45-1. You have three men versus the field, but they're all kind of long shots.
Right.
Like, Sergio Garcia, Bubba Watson, and Fred Couples to make the cut at the Masters. Two of the guys are in the senior divisions. One guy and the other guy kind of just got out, or is just around. And 8-1 is not terrible.
Right.
Tommy Fleetwood, top European, 12. That's not bad.
The only names that you've mentioned that I know anything about is Tiger, Phil Mickelson. Those are the only names that actually ring a bell to me.
Yeah, like they have an odds boost at +180. Tiger Woods, Hideki Matsuyama, and Patrick Reed to make the cut. I mean, the cut is the top 50 guys out of 84. So you're telling me he just can't be in the bottom third? I think that's doable to get him into the weekend.
Right.
But honestly, I would almost stay away. If you're going to bet on these, obviously bet within your means. If you are betting on Tiger, I would not be betting the house, be betting beer money. I would be betting beer money anyway, but I know a lot of people that would bet the fucking house on these things.
You see, that's what I say whenever, because I've gone on record, and I've even told you this, I've never really been a bettor. I've never been a gambler. I go to Atlantic City, I fuck with a few slot machines here and there, but I don't play the big tables. I don't bet big stuff like that. I just never saw I know there's some people out there like yourself that are very heavily into betting and stuff like that. I just never saw the point of it, but that's just me.
Well, when it comes to like betting, when it comes to the betting in certain sports, golf, I'll say this, like golf and racing and like NASCAR, there's no fucking handicap. It's, you bet your favorite guy, you see what the price is, and you hope they win.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, some people, oh, well, all right, well, you can handicap the games in the courses in certain ways. Is, all right, who's the best long driver? Who has the best irons? Who has the best putter? Fine. Other than that, that's it. Or who plays better in rain? Who plays better in dry? Like, that's it. You're not going to be doing a deep dive into it. If you find your favorite guys, if they're there, if they're within a price that you like, yeah, bet them.
Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from. It's just,
now when it comes to something like football, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that you can do that you can work around it.
Well, it's like I've heard people saying, like I said, you're a better. So you bet with your brain, not bet with your heart.
Yeah, bet with your brain, not with your dick. Bet with the top head, not your bottom head.
Oh, that's when you're going into a singles bar. Because the little head's always going to win out there. So
listen. You'd be surprised how many people get very cockstrong when it comes to betting when they're down.
Yeah, because they're looking for that quick fix. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for that easy win.
Yep, and there's no such thing.
Oh, you see, like I said, I've never been a gambler and stuff like that, and people used to give me shit because they're like, as much as the women are beautiful in these some of these places, I never believed in strip clubs either, because you're giving all these money to these chicks. They're going to show you a little something, but it's not like you're going to get it. You're going to get anything out of it unless you've got a girl at home that you're going to be like, okay, I've had enough. Let's have some fun. But if you're single, guess what? You're going home and you're playing five knuckle shuffle with yourself. But
telling yourself you can't see me.
You know, you're like somebody. Well, I'm not going to say it on the air, but
little Jimmy.
Somebody that met their favorite person over the weekend. But anyway, but no, it's like I never saw the purpose of those. And my friends used to give me shit about it because I had friends before I met you that were big time gamblers. And they're like, well, why don't you put a bet on this, 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 this? And I go, I don't see the point. This is why I don't play the lottery. This is why I don't, like, do scratch-offs. Because all you're doing is basically throwing your money away. And that's just the way I feel. You know, I mean, some people, they invest in it. You're heavily invested in it. That's, you know, I give you props for that. But you know how to, but you know how to do it the right way.
But there's also certain sports that I do. Like, honest to God, if I lose track of certain things, like the NBA, I have lost complete track of the NBA. Guess what? I am betting no fucking NBA until at least, if anything, the playoffs. And even then, I'm not betting on the game. I'm betting on stats.
But it's like I said, you're betting with your brain, not your heart.
Yeah, well, I also understand, like, my bread and butter is made from college football.
Right.
That is where my money is made. That's where I can turn and look at certain things, because I also go and do research on certain – I go and do research on the colleges that no one wants to, the MAC, the – Mountain West, like not the D2 schools, but the FCS schools if they're around. Like, oh, well, what is fucking Iowa doing? Like, why are they in this predicament? Like, I don't know who the fuck some of these guys are, but I also know what lines should be what. That's a math thing.
Right. Well, that's just a right way to go about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I've seen people that, like, oh, I'm going to bet on so-and-so because I don't know what movie I saw it. I don't know what movie I saw this line, but maybe you know the line. He goes, I always bet on the horse that does his business before the race.
Yeah, I forget the line, but I know so many people that fucking do that too.
That they're like, because he's lighter and he feels better. I don't know, but you know that you've heard the line before.
Yeah. Okay, but, you know how many people I know that literally when they used to bet on, like, fucking greyhounds or shit like that, they would literally go to the track to see if whichever one would take a shit or take a piss and go bet on that one? Same thing.
Yeah, but here's the question. How many of those animals actually friggin' won?
That's a great question. I don't have the odds. I don't have that, but like,
but you know that, you know what I'm talking about because you said you've known people that have done that.
Yeah. I've seen the good. I've seen the bad. I've seen the good in betting because I've lived it. I've seen the bad because I've seen other people turn around and be like screaming that they've lost all their fucking money. I've literally I was behind a guy when I was making my bet. That a guy legitimately dropped about $25,000, and on like four bets.
See, to me, that's just fucking asinine.
But that's what I mean. I'm like a total of 25 grand. I looked at him and I just go, charity? Would you like to give to a charity, good sir?
You said this to the guy?
Oh yeah, I said it to the guy as a joke. Because you're dropping 25 grand, I'm like, you got all this money. You sure you don't want to just give it away?
I'll take it.
Yeah, right? I'll find something good to do with it, good to use.
But it's like, I just never, like I said, I was never a gambler and stuff like that. Like I said, when it goes back to the strip club, I had a friend. He's no longer with us. His name's Charles Seclair. He's the guy I went to high school with. He was one of my best friends in high school. But Charlie would go into a strip club, and I've gone to a couple of times with him, and he would literally throw $400 to $500 on these chicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between lap dances and just making it rain. You know, and I'm like, and I asked him after one of these times, I'm like, Charlie, what do you get out of it? And he goes, oh, well, maybe if I throw enough money, they'll hook, will want to hook up with him, hook up with me after their set. And I honestly got to ask him, I said, Charlie, how many years have you and I been coming, doing stuff like this? He goes, about 3 or 4. And you know how many times he said he hooked up with chicks? Once. One time. And I remember that time the chick was also drunk off her ass.
Let me say, what was it, coming out of Delilah's?
No, it was coming out of RJ's.
Oh!
Now, for those listening, RJ's was... Ronnie, do you want to describe RJ's in one word to people listening?
Meth.
Huh?
Meth.
You're talking about women that were 45 to 50 years old, scars, and... They look like they were the term MILFs, but
used,
not not so much.
And,
used, abused, and put away wet.
Yeah.
But like I said, he hooked up with a dancer from RJ's. And the reason I know is because we drove in separate cars, and I saw the two of them hook it up in his old Firebird. Because we were parked next to it. I saw way too much more than I wanted to say.
I thought you were about to tell me that you... I thought I was waiting for you to tell me you went to Torpedoes.
Nah. But the whole point I'm trying to make... The whole point of what I was trying to make is... Throwing that much money at gambling, strippers, whatever the situation it would be. Some guys bet with the wrong part of their body. They don't bet with their heart. They bet with their gut. And sometimes bet with your gut doesn't always work. You know, bet
like,
smart.
Well, the thing is, and I'll do this more when we start getting into the year because I'm going to start probably a little bit earlier this year for college football because I'm going to start going into the stuff like the deeper schools that I go into.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to explain what these teams are doing well. Yeah, it's easier said than done, but the thing is, though, is if you have a gut feeling and you think, hey, I think this is the right spot, couple bucks down on the money line or whatever you feel like, but don't be like, oh, well, I need this, and this to break. Okay, well, how much you throw down? $50. Well, if you have 5 reasons to give yourself what you need to happen to break, maybe that bet's not a good idea.
True.
So I'll give a great example, and then we'll close this out.
Okay.
Remember when Auburn at the beginning of the last year, towards the end of last year, was facing New Mexico State?
I guess I don't remember.
I was all over New Mexico State all year.
Okay.
And I flat out said that New Mexico State will beat Auburn.
Okay.
And I remember Christian going, you're nuts. Like, that's not going to happen. I go, no, it's going to happen because so-and-so, Diego is a better quarterback than them, and Auburn's not going to give a shit. At the end of the year, they're already out of every contention. They're already in a set bowl game. They're not going to care about this game. What happens? New Mexico State comes in, wins by 3 touchdowns. Guess what? It was 5-1 on the money line. I dropped a $10 bet, won $50 on it, because I knew from the beginning Auburn was not going to give a shit, and boy, was I right.
But you see, that just proves my point. You're betting with your brain. You're betting not just
I'm also putting hours and hours of research in.
This is what I did. Of course, this is what I'm trying to tell you. You're betting the smart way. You're not just betting for the sake of betting.
Like right now, I've been doing some stuff on the draft because you can bet on the draft too. You can bet on the NFL draft on what player goes where that you think, that you predict. Who's the first quarterback that goes? Well, it's kind of easy. It's Caleb Williams. That's already kind of been set in stone. Caleb's going to be the first.
In other words, it's a no-brainer, in other words.
Yeah, it literally, you ready for this? It's minus 1,000.
Jesus Christ, even I know that's big.
So here's a way to describe it for anyone that doesn't understand. Minus 10,000 means you have to put up $10,000 to win 100.
Fucking crazy, man.
Yeah. Like, then, like, you can literally bet on the first top seven. You can bet on the top seven picks.
Really?
Yeah. Then you can also bet on what team, like right now, the Jets. I'll go to the Jets. New York Jets' first draft position. Offensive lineman and tight end are tied at plus 135. Then a wide receiver at 2.5 to 1.
Okay.
But guess what? I think they're going to get Brock Bowers. But if I split it, I'm going to win no matter what because they're not going to get a wide receiver in the first round. They're either going to get an offensive lineman or a tight end.
They're not going to go for a quarterback in the first round again?
No. No, not like I said. Not they have Rodgers, so I think. What's Brock Bowers over? See, I love that Brock Bowers over under. You can bet on what like Brock Bowers is over under 11.5. Like, will he be drafted before or after 12? And the under is plus 120, which means if you bet $100, you get 120 back.
Right.
Well, my position is I think the Jets are going to get him. The Jets pick at 10.
Okay.
Which means I would take the under.
All right.
That's also where the risk is would he go 10 or are they going to go for, or the Jets going to go for an offensive lineman? And I'll start, like, now we're within 2 weeks. So now we're going to start hearing more stuff about the draft, and more of this stuff will become known.
Right.
Yeah. But we'll talk more about the draft next week because it's draft season. So we'll be getting some more information and we'll figure it out. And we'll talk more about the betting side of it because it's very interesting. It is. It is a interesting concept. It's not just about betting money. It's about finding the stories. It's about doing the research. It's not just putting your money down and praying to fucking God, praying to the spaghetti monster in the sky. It's literally find that edge. Sports betting is one of the few things you could find an edge for.
Right.
But the question is, too, is you know this. Which means I know this, which means Joe Schmo in Idaho knows this. If this all gets bet, Vegas then knows it, and they fuck with the numbers.
But you see, this is why, you know, it's like I've never, like I said, I've never really been a better guy. I've never have been because I just don't see the point, but like I said, that's me. It's like, because it's just, what's the point of throwing money after something that may or may not produce?
But that's the thing too. I don't understand the people that bet, say, over $100. A game. I bet $5. just because if I'm going to watch it, I want a little bit of excitement in it.
Now,
$5.
I mean, we're closing on to, this will be the final point, and then we'll call it a night because it's getting late. But I've known guys, I've known people that have bet, and I've known people with the whole strip club, but I've known both things. I had a friend somebody I went to high school with, I'll just say his first name, Dave, but I'll leave it at that. He and I we met up in Atlantic City. I was down there with family. I just happened to run into him. And me and him walked off together, and he went to the high roller section of Atlantic City, you know, with the big table. And I forget, what was it, roulette or craps? I forget what it was. And right off the bat, I like I said, it was either or. I don't remember. The first thing he does is he goes in his pocket and whips out $1,000 and puts it down on the very first thing of whatever game it was. Like I said, this is going back 35 years, so I can't remember exactly what it was. And he lost. And I said to him, dude, you just lost $1,000. And he goes, eh. I'm like, in 1991 or whatever the year it was, $1,000 was a lot more than $1,000 is nowadays.
Yeah.
But I said to myself, like, and he goes, well, are you going to bet? And I go, I'm going to go over to the nickel slots. He goes, why'd you play the big stuff? I'm like, because I'm not going to lose my fucking money, and there's no point in it to him to this day on Facebook and stuff. He still goes to Atlantic City and bets big. I'm like, dude, you got a family now. You can't keep betting like you did when you were 21, 22 years old. He's like, I enjoy it. I'm like, whatever. But in today's market, I just don't see it.
Like I said, if he has the money to blow, good on him. But don't bet above your head. Don't bet above your means.
But like I said, it just, to me, it just seems stupid. I'm not knocking people who bet. And I've even joked with you about that. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go put $50 or something on a sure thing type of thing. But to me, you never bet on sure things. I've never heard you say, oh, I'm going to bet $100 or $200 on something.
No, I never.
Because I know your wife would kill you.
Well, no. Because I've learned there is no such thing as a sure thing when it comes to gambling, because one wrong move, someone gets hurt, there goes your fucking money.
Right.
I've learned, never learned the hard way, but I've learned just in general that there's no such thing as a sure thing. I've seen the good side of gambling and I've seen the bad side. I've walked through Atlantic City and I've seen people screaming that they've lost all their fucking money. I've stood behind guys that have bet $25,000 on a sporting event. And at the same time, too, I've heard those same type of guys in the bar while watching the game at the sports book screaming that they lost all their money. Doesn't mean gambling's a bad thing, but if you don't know what you're doing, you find yourself in a hole. AKA like the interpreter for Shohei Ohtani.
But yeah, this is exactly why I am never going to bet. I am never going to put any money down at, like, I mean, just this weekend, what was it, just Thursday or Friday, I gave, the Powerball was what, $1.3 billion or something?
Yeah.
Or Mega, or one of them was that. You know how much money I spent on a ticket? $2.
Nothing.
$2.
$2. Yeah, be in it to win it.
One line, $2. That's it. I didn't win, but guess what? I didn't blow a tremendous amount of money.
No, I know people that I've seen people drop $20, $30. I've seen people go into a pool where they have $500 for fucking tickets.
Yeah, and I mean, the same thing goes for when with the whole boxes in the Super Bowl thing. My girlfriend does that. Her father's done that. I know, I think you've done that.
Yeah.
Buy a box and stuff like that. That's just something I know. they're like, oh, it's like $20 a box or $15 a box or whatever the situation was. And I'm like, are you get that, that 9 out of 10 times nobody wins those boxes. You know, nobody gets those boxes right off the top.
No, it's 100. It's literally, it's 100 to 1.
Exactly. And I don't, and that's one thing I've never done with people, the things that we've been discussing. I don't fault them. I don't criticize them. I don't preach to them saying you should do it. It's your money, your time. Do with it what you want. You're not going to hear me say, don't do that. That's stupid. I said, like my friend who used to drop money on the strippers.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and tell him he's going to blow his $300, $400, $500, $600 on fucking strippers. It's his money. He wants to do it. Let him.
Yeah,
he paid for it.
He wants to blow his wad. Let him blow his wad.
I'm having flashbacks to what that woman looked like. And
all right, well,
I've had enough issues this week. I don't need to think of that again.
And we'll go into it too, because 2 weeks too, we get into the Kentucky Derby also.
We'll talk Mania too when Ryan comes back.
Yes, we will. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the show. If you like what you heard, please follow us on all social media accounts under the Nerdport Network. Follow us individually at F and Ronnie.
At the Zombie Master.
Follow us. Just join me. Join myself.
Follow Christian at DailyBlitz _61.
Join myself back here tomorrow as myself and Chris will bullshit. Maybe he and I will talk some Mania, but probably not a lot because I probably won't get a word in edgewise.
No comment.
But with that being said, if you like what you heard, tell your friends. But if you didn't like what you hear, tell your enemies. But until then, always remind them three things. One, Bobby Bonilla is getting paid. Two, Shohei Ohtani's getting paid. And three, there is always a teachable moment. And if you don't believe me, well, hell, that's just a fact of life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good night.